The Capital Investment Committee hearing for February 19th is called to order. Members, before we move on to business, as the public may know, you know, you have seen increased security around here, and so just wanted to note that the Minnesota House of Representatives, we appreciate your interest and participation in the legislative process. To ensure everyone can view, hear, and understand today's proceedings, we ask for your cooperation in maintaining decorum and civility throughout this hearing. For the safety and security and comfort of all attendees, please note the following guidelines. I, the committee chair, maintain control of these proceedings and establish the following expectations. Signs and placards are not permitted in the hearing room. Verbal outbursts, shouting, or disruptive behavior will not be tolerated. Applause or other audible demonstrations are not allowed. For safety reasons, standing or sitting in walkways and aisles or standing or obstructing at your chair is prohibited. If you require any accommodation, please ask or speak with our sergeant staff. They are identified with their gold ties. Troopers and house security personnel are present to ensure everyone's safety. Those providing testimony will be given specific time limits, which must be strictly observed. If you receive an entrance ticket, please retain it as it may be required for re-entry if you leave the hearing room. Failure to comply with these guidelines may result in the removal from the hearing room. Our goal is to conduct these proceedings efficiently while ensuring everyone the opportunity to observe and participate appropriately. And with that, a quorum is present. Vice Chair Frederick, may I have a motion to approve the minutes for May 6, 2025?
So moved.
Vice Chair Frederick moves approval of the minutes for May 6, 2025. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Members, while most of the committees were pretty quiet during the interim, I really appreciate all of you for being on tours with all of us and Chair Franzen and for your partnership in making this happen. As you all may have known, you know, we travel over 3,000 miles across the state of Minnesota and visited over 345 projects or heard or, you know, saw the presentations. So just really appreciate all of your efforts on the road and for all of our community members across the state for working with us. So today we have before us Jenny and Joe, thank you both, and then our committee staff for organizing everything. Thank you. So another day, we will do that. So with us today, yeah, so before we move on to the Commissioner of MMB, I just want to introduce you all to our new committee legislative assistant for the DFL, Nia Chang, who will be joining us. And as you may know, and Joe mentioned earlier, Tenzin has moved on to transportation foley with Chair Kosnick and Chair Tapke. And so I just want to welcome Nia Chang for joining us. Commissioner, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Co-Chair France and Co-Chair Lee and members of the committee. My name is Erin Campbell, and I'm the Commissioner at Minnesota Management and Budget. I'm here today to present an overview of the Governor's 2026 Infrastructure Plan, and I know that you'll be hearing more from agency partners in the coming days. Today, I'll walk you through the capital budget process, the Governor's Infrastructure Plan, and the funding for that plan. First, we'll talk about the capital budget process that MMB facilitates. MMB collects information for the capital budget as directed by state statute. The process is open to state agencies and political subdivisions whose capital projects are generally eligible for general obligation bonds. MMB provides training and technical assistance to political subdivisions and state agencies to submit requests to MMB. Requests are collected in odd-numbered calendar years, and the governor's recommendations are published in January of the even-numbered years. MMB publishes instructions. We did so in for the 2026 capital budget in May of 2025. We hosted a Q&A session and provided instructions and assistance to agencies and political subdivisions and who were submitting requests. The initial state agency and political subdivision requests were published by MMB in July of 2025. MMB received almost $7 billion in requests this year, $3.8 billion from state agencies, and $3 billion from political subdivisions. To better understand the range of requests, MMB staff visited some project sites and projects that had been built with funds from previous bonding bills. We conducted meetings with requesting entities and provided technical assistance to ensure the full scope of project needs were being met within the rules of how GO bonds can be used. On January 15th, MMB published the governor's recommendations and all final requests on our website. Just as a reminder, there were some changes in the last legislative session that will impact how we put together bonding bills. A provision in the 2025 state government omnibus law directs MMB to no longer assume future general obligation bond authorizations in the budget and economic forecast. So what this means is that the full cost of the general obligation bond debt service for future bonding bills will need to be tracked against the bottom line of the general fund. Previously, the budget forecast assumed the enactment of a bonding bill consistent with recent averages. Here's some highlights from our 2026 bonding tours. They're not quite as robust as yours, but we looked at both recently completed projects and new requests. We visited the Robbinsdale Water Treatment Facility that was assisted by a low-interest loan from the Public Facilities Authority. This visit, of course, demonstrates how crucial water infrastructure funding is for improving water quality for local governments. We visited the Spring Lake Park Reserve in Dakota County to see how the Met Council's Parks and Trails grants are invested in improving walking and biking paths, and also, in that case, reintroducing a herd of bison to the park. We also visited the DNR's Metro Fish Hatchery to see the crucial research and fish management work being done there, and also the aging infrastructure that puts that important work at risk. The facility's last major upgrade was in 1989, and improvements to the hatchery rank as DNR's top priority for its betterment of buildings program. Next, I'll walk you through what Governor Walz is proposing. This slide shows the distribution of the governor's 2026 infrastructure plan across several categories. The governor recommends a total of $907 million in funding from all sources. I will show in more detail how that funding breaks down a little bit later in this presentation. Consistent with the governor's priorities last legislative session, the governor recommends a total of $316 million in asset preservation investments. That represents 45% of the general obligation bonds in this bill and 35% of all funds. The state agencies with the highest deferred maintenance were prioritized. So the highlights there include $75 million for Minnesota State and the University of Minnesota, $54 million for the Department of Corrections, $30 million for the Department of Natural Resources, and $24 million each for Veterans Affairs and Direct Care and Treatment. State facilities face a significant backlog of deferred maintenance, $6.7 billion across state agencies, Minnesota State, and the University of Minnesota. State agencies receive their funding to upkeep facilities through this committee and asset preservation appropriations. When these appropriations are insufficient to meet facility needs, the work cannot be completed, becomes deferred maintenance. As you have observed on tours this interim, state facility teams do an excellent job working with limited resources. But as conditions deteriorate, they can become more expensive to resolve. The average cost for a deferred maintenance project for a facility in excellent condition is $6,000, but that cost rises to $196,000 for facilities in crisis condition. Looking just at state agencies, a $1.3 billion backlog in 2015 has nearly doubled to $2.3 billion, even during that time that the legislature enacted two of the largest bonding bills in state history. It is this growing issue of deferred maintenance that drives much of the governor's recommendations being devoted to asset preservation. Asset preservation projects are improvements to existing state assets to address life and safety hazards, accessibility, security, building code violations, and to eliminate hazardous materials. It's not about constructing new buildings, it's about protecting the facilities that we already have and the investments that we've already made. The 2025 bonding bill made a historic $216 million investment in asset preservation, and we are really very grateful to the legislature to devoting such a significant share of the bill to asset preservation compared to other enacted bills in the last decade. As you can see, asset preservation funds are invested across the state. This map shows all facilities that would be eligible to receive asset preservation funds from the governor's plan. The governor is recommending asset preservation funding for 14 agencies with facilities located across the state. About 45% would be invested in Greater Minnesota, and 55% would be invested in the seven-county metro area. And this split aligns with where state facilities are located. We've got about 47% of facilities in greater Minnesota and about 53% in the metro area. Following asset preservation, water and transportation infrastructure make up the next largest share of the governor's recommendations. We know there continues to be a huge demand for water infrastructure funding. In fact, one-third of the local government requests that MMB received totaled $1 billion were for water infrastructure projects. And we know that this only represents a portion of the need. MPCA published a report just last month identifying $2.7 billion in wastewater infrastructure needs alone. That is why the governor's plan invests $113 million in water infrastructure programs for wastewater, clean drinking water, replacing lead service lines, and addressing emerging contaminants. More than 1 million Minnesotans live in communities with high priority drinking and wastewater infrastructure projects. This funding would support those communities in addressing water needs. The governor's plan also invests $50 million in high priority pavement projects on trunk highways across the state and $4 million for infrastructure needs of publicly owned ports on the Mississippi River and on Lake Superior. The governor's plan continues to prioritize public safety by investing $47 million for the renovation and expansion of the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension's Bemidji Regional Office and Forensics Science Laboratory. This project will provide additional space and resources to support increased demand for investigatory and laboratory analysis for criminal investigations in northern Minnesota. The expanded space will also be used for training BCA and local law enforcement officers. The governor recommends $41 million for Capitol Complex security upgrades. This would fully fund the recommendations that were made last month by the Advisory Committee on Capitol Area Security. The governor's plan also includes $61 million for the Department of Corrections to expand the Rush City Correctional Facility to provide educational, rehabilitative, and other programming for people who are incarcerated. This project will give incarcerated persons access to education, behavioral health, religious, medical, and other services. The legislature and the Walz administration have invested $500 million in housing infrastructure bonds since 2020, and the governor's plan continues to prioritize affordable housing by recommending $50 million in housing infrastructure bonds. This investment will preserve or create between 450 and 550 homes. The governor is also recommending $10 million in public housing rehab grants to local governments to improve locally owned public housing across the state. This investment will preserve between 350 and 450 homes. As in recent years, rather than earmarks for individual local government projects, the governor recommends $170 million in funding for competitive agency grant programs and set aside an amount of $35 million for the legislature to appropriate to specific projects. Together, this means that over $200 million of the governor's plan would go towards local government projects. The governor's plan prioritizes investments in outdoor recreation and Minnesota's natural environment by investing in parks and trails, including making state parks more accessible. The governor's plan includes $10 million for dam safety repair and $9 million for flood hazard mitigation. $9 million for the Reinvest in Minnesota, or RIM program, will be used to acquire permanent easements in ecologically sensitive areas to improve water quality and wildlife habitat. $5 million for the DNR aviation infrastructure at the Brainerd Regional Airport will support and improve the DNR's emergency responses for wildfires, search and rescue operations, and other safety and natural resource management needs. The bill also includes $5 million for replacing wetlands drained or filled by local government road construction projects. $50 million is included for the Rural Finance Authority loans, and this will help Minnesota farmers obtain affordable financing. The RFA offers low-interest loans for land purchases, farm improvements, equipment, operating capital, disaster relief, and other activities. Also of note, the governor's plan invests $19 million for the demolition of the Centennial Office Building. This building is nearly 70 years old. It is in poor condition and beyond its useful life. Cost estimates to repair the building range from $175 to $250 million. After the Centennial Office building renovation, after the State Office building renovation is complete, 70% of the space in the Centennial Office building will be vacant. The remaining tenants will be moved to the Transportation Building at that time. To prepare this space, the governor recommends $22 million for renovating the Transportation Building. The governor's plan also includes $19 million for direct care and treatment in St. Peter for replacing the water, sanitary, and storm sewer infrastructure to ensure clients and staff have access to safe, functioning water infrastructure. The 2023 bonding bill appropriated the state share of $78 million for demolition and replacement of administrative and residential buildings for the domiciliary program at Hastings Veterans Home. It is now clear that the federal government will not be awarding Minnesota funds to complete the original project scope. So the governor recommends repurposing these funds for other investments in domiciliary programs. The funds would now be used for scaled-down renovation of the Hastings Veterans Home and a renovation of Building 16 at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. To summarize here, the $750 million of this package is general obligation bonds, $50 million of which is user-financed. Another $157 million is made up of other funds, such as appropriation bonds, trunk highway cash, general fund cash, for a total of $907 million in all funds. The debt service costs for bonds is paid off over a 20-year period. This table shows the biennial impact of the governor's recommendations to the general fund and to the trunk highway fund. The general fund shows the total cost of debt service for the governor's recommendations. As I mentioned earlier, the November 2025 forecast did not include an assumption about the size of the bonding bill enacted in this legislative session or future legislative sessions. So the full cost of the governor's recommendations need to be tracked against the bottom line of the general fund. Overall, the general fund impact is $57.3 million this biennium and $94.2 million next biennium. The trunk highway fund impact is $13.4 million this biennium and $7.8 million next biennium. The governor's recommendations continue to make infrastructure investments that are critical to the state while remaining within the debt capacity guidelines and striking a balance between needed investments and fiscal responsibility. Just as a reminder, materials for the 2026 governor's recommendations are posted on MMB's website. There you can find a summary of all state and local project requests and those that were included in the governor's infrastructure plan. And with that, I thank you for hearing the overview of the governor's recommendations. I know agencies will present more detail on individual projects, but I'm happy to try to answer any questions you have.
Thank you, Commissioner. Chair Franson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Campbell, one of the things that I'm concerned about is the debt service. Where are we coming up with the debt service for this this bonding bill here? Where does the governor plan on taking the money from, just so we have an idea if it's palatable or not, because I don't see that on here.
Commissioner Campbell.
Chair Franson, you'll see more detail about that when the governor releases a supplemental budget bill, but that won't be until after the forecast. And I think what you'll find is that the money isn't coming off of the bottom line. We will be looking for places to reduce in order to pay for the debt service.
Chair Franson.
Thank you, Commissioner. I would think, though, that you would anticipate that answer or that question today. Can you give us any ideas of what areas he's planning on reducing just to start softening the blow here?
Commissioner Campbell.
Chair Lee, Chair Franson, I can't. That's not my information to share at this time. That information will be available when the governor's supplemental budget becomes available.
Chair Kosnick.
Thank you, Commissioner. You'd mentioned that there's some tenants here in the Centennial Building that will be moving to Transportation Building. What agencies are moving? Would that be aside from the House, obviously?
Commissioner Campbell.
Chair Lee, Representative Koznick, there are very few agencies left in the Centennial Office Building. MMB is one of them. And then there are some boards and commissions. I believe the OLA's office is still located in that building. Again, it's only 30% of the tenants in the building at this time.
Chair Koznick.
Thank you. So there might not be that many agencies, but there are other commissions and stuff. In this proposal, you have $8 million from the Trunk Highway Fund going to the transportation building consolidation and remodeling. So you're saying it's appropriate use of transportation dollars, trunk highway dollars, for these other agencies and commissions?
Commissioner Campbell.
Chair Lee and Representative Koznick, no. That money is only appropriately used for the Department of Transportation, and the Department of Transportation will also be relocating within the building. And so those funds will be used for their relocation purposes.
Chair Koznick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess we'll have to take a closer look at that because I have concerns about using trunk highway dollars for remodeling buildings. We're already falling behind on maintaining our roads. We have local cities probably sitting behind me and around us that have projects that they would like help with. And you're suggesting that we're remodeling the transportation building. I'm not sure that sits very well with trunk highway dollars.
Commissioner Campbell.
Chair Lee, Representative Koznick, the transportation building has been built with trunk highway fund dollars, and so it is, whether or not it is the priority of everybody to do that or not is a question, but whether or not it is appropriate or not, I think we feel we know the answer to that.
And Commissioner Campbell, to that point, I think on the spreadsheet that we have received from staff, excuse me, and from you guys, is that there's $2 million to the Department of Transportation for the same purpose, and I think Chair Koznick, to that point, that's why they're using the $2 million for the general fund cash. And so are you able to speak to that? Is the $2 million for the space that will be inhabited by the non-Department of Transportation, please?
Chair Lee, it is my understanding that is correct, and that is the recommendation from our partners at the Department of Transportation who have assessed what would be appropriate.
Thank you. Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. You know, recycling is important, and with the Centennial Building, since it was the Centennial Building for the Centennial of the State, rather than having it demolished and go into a construction debris landfill, are there any plans for, like, recovering the granite facades? Is there anything of the building that's there where it could be reused? I would think that maybe that could be distributed to artists around the state for memorials. It would be something that could be used rather than just smashing it and burying it. There's a lot of, you know, as we go through all these buildings, there's a lot of history that's embedded in them and a lot of energy as well. And it would seem that there'd be a way of reusing it. Are there any plans for any reuse of the materials?
Chair Hansen, we have the Department of Administration after this, and so maybe that will be more directed towards them. But Commissioner Campbell, if you have any response.
Chair Lee, Representative Hansen, your point is well taken, and I don't know the answer to that, but I assume that my colleagues at the Department of Administration will be able to speak to that.
Chair Hansen. Members, any additional questions? Seeing none, thank you, Commissioner Campbell. Oh, Chair Lee, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. Just a couple questions quick on the outdoor and recreation. Do we have an idea how much is, like, going into parks and trails, per se? You know, I see dam repair and local roads in that area and the airport, but, like, how much do you know how much is actually going to parks and trails?
Commissioner Campbell.
Chair Lee, Chair Lee, Representative Lilly, it would be $1 million at DNR and $1 million for the Met Council, Parks and Trails.
Chair Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's it. It just doesn't. And then another, we might have to modify that a little, I hope. So then on the water infrastructure, I'd just be curious if you can break it down a little bit in that category, like how much is Metro? Because you do that in another area, Metro versus Greater Minnesota.
Commissioner Campbell.
Chair Lee, Representative Lilly, about 70% of the projects go to Greater Minnesota.
Chair Lilly.
Thank you.
Yeah, members, so just more on specific. If you, so we do have the spreadsheet in your package too, and so if you have any specific questions, take a look at that. And then today, Commissioner Campbell is just here to provide a high overview on the governor's proposal. And so we will be having the individual state agencies come before us too. And at that time, you can ask more specific questions. Thank you, Commissioner Campbell.
Thank you for having me.
Next on the agenda, we do have the Department of Administration. Welcome, Commissioner Grunewald and your team. And so the Department of Administration will be talking about the their 2026 Governor's Bonding Recommendation, the 2025 Asset Preservation Summary Report, and the 2025 CAPRA Summary Report. Welcome, Commissioner. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair. I'm Tamar Grunewald. I'm the Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Administration. Good to see all of you this morning. Thank you for the opportunity to present the Governor's Capital Budget Recommendations for Administration. I have with me today Assistant Commissioner Wayne Wozlowski and Greg Ewig, who directs our real estate and construction services. We'll walk through an overview. Mr. Ewig will walk through an overview of the annual asset preservation and CAPRA reports. I want to start with some high-level background on ADMIN's work. ADMIN is a central service agency, and our work helps government best serve Minnesotans in every community across the state. We have 580 employees and 27 divisions. We insure $16.1 billion worth of assets through our risk division. We maintain the capital and 21 state-owned buildings through our facilities management division. We manage 750 property leases and 324 construction projects through our real estate and construction division. We track and monitor maintenance of hundreds or thousands of state-owned buildings through our enterprise real estate program. We manage a state fleet of 2,500 vehicles, including implementing electrification. We also, through our state procurement division, helped to secure $3 billion worth of goods and services, including primary contracts that are also available to local governments. ADMIN's wide-ranging work supports Minnesota from border to border. We provide services to all communities across the state, all 87 counties, and 11 sovereign nations. Our divisions also oversee assets and projects across the entire state, as I stated earlier. Our State Historic Preservation Office, our Equitable Procurement Division, Apex Small Business Development, and Conflict Dispute Resolution are just an example of a few of those divisions. We provide cost-effective and transparent services. We make government more accessible and responsible to the public through our Data Practices Office and Grants Management Office, just to name a few. This work supports the governor's recommendations for ADMIN's capital budget requests. I'll now turn it over to Mr. Ewig to go over the asset preservation and CAPRA reports.
Welcome, Director. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Commissioner, members. I am Greg Ewig. I'm the Director of Real Estate and Construction Services at the Department of Administration. And before just, you know, diving into specific asset preservation projects and funding, this slide will provide a little bit of context for why asset preservation funding exists. The graph you see here shows deferred maintenance as a percentage of facilities replacement value. This is generally, it's organized by agency, just to give you a rough illustration. And in practical terms, what this shows is it estimates how much repair needs have accumulated relative to roughly what it would cost to replace the building in these agency portfolios. Our goal across the state portfolio is to keep facilities in good or better condition. I think if you're looking at the color coding here, try to keep it within the green or blue. Those that are getting into the yellow and orange are ones with higher percentage of deferred maintenance. As you all know, asset preservation is the primary tool we use to address these needs. As a reminder, asset preservation is a broad spectrum of allowable uses. We usually focus on life, health, safety issues, cleaning up hazardous waste, improving accessibility, and undertaking major building system repairs and replacements with these funds. As noted, we do not use these funds for land acquisition, new construction, or just routine operations, maintenance, that sort of thing. You should, I believe everybody has a copy of the 2025 Asset Preservation and CAPR yearly reports, which gives you a snapshot of which projects agencies have used asset preservation funding. We'll focus on 2025 today, but we've included the 2023 asset preservation appropriations for additional context as they were being actively used. In 2023, the legislature appropriated roughly $60 million, and in 25, roughly $50 million. In both cycles, the largest allocation went to the Department of Corrections, reflecting the size, age, and 24/7 operational demands of secure facilities. They have nearly five times the amount of deferred maintenance as the next agency, which also has 24/7 operations, direct care, and treatment. Other allocations supported Veteran Affairs, Direct Care and Treatment, State Academies, and the Purpich Center, all agencies with aging infrastructure and significant life safety and mechanical system deficiencies. The following slide really is a roll-up or summary of amounts by agency and by appropriation year. I just wanted to highlight a couple of things here. The correction spending addresses needs at roughly nine locations located throughout the state. That includes Faribault, Lionel Lakes, Oak Park Heights, Rush City, Red Wing, St. Cloud, Shakopee, Togo, and Willow River. Similarly, direct care and treatment addresses needs at five locations in Anoka, Brainerd, Moose Lake, St. Peter, and Wilmer. And state academies have projects in both campuses in Faribault. Continuing, just Veterans Affairs, just a note here on Veterans Affairs, although there's a zero for 2025, rest assured they have a number of projects on deck in Fergus Falls, Little Falls, Laverne, Minneapolis, and Silver Bay. Some of those include major mechanical systems such as plumbing and fire alarm upgrades and elevator repair at the Veterans Affairs locations. And the Purpich Center for the Arts is also making some necessary AP repairs on their campus. Shifting over to the Capital Asset Preservation and Replacement Account, or CAPRA, very similar to asset preservation requirements. However, CAPRA is available enterprise-wide with some exclusions, excluding DNR and DOT, which has their own, and reserved for emergencies, but also to address traditional AP qualifying repairs. Like asset preservation, CAPRA cannot also be used for land acquisition, new construction, or routine maintenance. The Department of Administration administers the appropriation and allocates to qualifying uses upon request. And as a reminder, the legislature appropriated $9 million in 2023 and $1 million in 2025 for those purposes, 99% of which has already been encumbered and in use. Digging deeper into the CAPRA report, we do have a number of areas where we've applied CAPRA funds, including at the Department of Administration, to address a broken security gate at the Anderson Building, a parking ramp, a major sanitary sewer failure at the Lionel Lakes Correctional Facility, and also a weather-induced erosion of the entrance road at the same facility, which needed immediate attention. Some of the other areas also included some CAPRA funds at the Iron Range Resources Board and the public safety, the driver and vehicle services location in Arden Hills, which also had a sanitary sewer line break last year. And then Veterans Affairs was addressing some sprinkler and water damage in one of the Minneapolis buildings on their campus. So with that, I will turn it back to the commissioner, and I appreciate your kind attention.
Right. Please proceed, Commissioner.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Ewig. The governor recommends, the governor recommends funding to complete phase three of the security upgrades on the Capitol complex. Summer security events push this request to be number one for us. Security vulnerabilities remain for buildings on the Capitol complex. The government functions rely on participants' both real and perceived safety concerns. This implementation will be prioritized by assessment and ongoing conversations with various stakeholders who also lead on security issues, including the Department of Public Safety, the Governor's Office, the Commission, the Legislative Commission on Capitol Security, the sergeants in both the House and the Senate, as well as legislators. Examples of improvements are security kiosks, additional security cameras, enhanced lighting and parking facilities, additional key card readers, installation of bollards, projectile resistant glass, and air intake security protections. Next, the governor recommends funding for asset preservation projects on the new state capitol building. The department follows the maintenance guides developed by the capital restoration contractor. So now we know the building is 10 years out from the renovation, the major renovation. This would ensure that building upkeep happens in a timely manner. These improvements are supported by staff and third-party assessments. This prevents the building from falling into disrepair again. Recommendations from the Capital Preservation Commission also support this. This need for funds was anticipated and discussed with the commission. For example, with this capital building as asset preservation, this request is about $5.5 million. This would be focused on the necessary maintenance around sanding and painting the exterior windows. A significant part of this cost is associated with the extensive scaffolding that's needed to sand and paint those exterior windows on the Capitol building. This project cost exceeds admin's capacity to cover with existing maintenance funds, so it goes beyond what admin is supported to do. Next, the governor recommends demolishing the Centennial Office Building. Admin has requested renovation funding in the past for this building, but the building is now at a critical point that it can no longer wait. For example, there's subpar building functionality. Nearly all the building systems need total replacement. This is the electrical system, heating, air conditioning, plumbing, communications, fire suppression, and building automation. A renovation is likely to cost over $250 million at a time when bond funding resources are needed for many projects. The building's also not well laid out, and it has poor accessibility. General funds will be used to relocate the cellular distributed antenna system, the DAS system. This is critical for emergency response, and it's utilized by state workforce and visitors on the Capitol complex. This project is phase one of the site redevelopment. Demolition is part of the long-term strategy of the complex and recommended in the most recent facilities strategic plan. The vacant building would have no tenants to cover continued expenses for maintenance. Mothballing the building would cost an estimated of $600,000 to $700,000 per year, and the ramp would remain in place for use. The tunnel will be capped until a new building is constructed, if that is what is decided. Next, the governor recommends funding to make space efficiency and modernization improvements in the transportation building. This is continuing to implement the state strategic facilities plan that reflects space efficiency and consolidation in line with the hybrid work environment. Resources are needed to rework space to meet the needs of the new tenants. This would create offices and conference rooms, changing electrical, lighting, and communications to fit the new space layout. This would also provide necessary security changes and installing modular workspaces. This also keeps important services near the legislature. As you heard earlier, MMB, the Office of the Legislative Auditor, and Campaign Finance Board are the tenants that will be moving out of the Centennial Office Building and into the transportation in the near future. This request would also complete the space reconfigurations for the return to office on the Capitol complex. This would also facilitate the demolition of the Centennial Office Building. Next, the governor recommends funding for the Capital Asset Preservation and Replacement Account, or CAPRA, which you heard a little earlier from Mr. Ewig. These are funds used for emergency repairs and abatement of hazardous materials in state buildings. The resources are critical to support agencies when unexpected issues arise. The average age of state buildings is 44 years old. So this request reflects admin's experience that emergency repairs will become more common. This is in line with what Mr. Ewig presented a little earlier this morning. These typical projects include emergency roof, pipe, and structural repairs, fire and water damage repairs, replacement of failed heating, ventilation, and air conditioning systems, as well as asbestos and lead abatement. Right now, this has a dangerously low balance. There's only $127,000 remaining in the account. and we recommend a $5 million appropriation per year to cover historic needs. This is a summary of admin's request broken out by funding source. Thank you again for the opportunity to present on the CAPRA and AP reports, as well as the governor's capital budget recommendations for admin. My team and I are ready to answer questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I believe you were in the room when I asked the question earlier on recovery of materials from the Centennial, if you have any answer to that.
Chair Lee, Representative, we will certainly look into that, and Assistant Commissioner Wayne Wozlowski can talk more specifically about efforts on that particular piece.
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you for the question. Obviously, sustainability is part of our mission, and as part of our requirements, we'll have over a requirement for over 75% of the building materials to be recycled. In the metro area, that typically is actually able to achieve somewhere closer to upper 80% for recycling during demolition projects. It gets more challenging in some of our greater Minnesota-like locations where you're farther away from recycling facilities, but in the metro, getting close to a 90% recycling rate is possible. Mr. Chair. For the record, Wayne Wozlowski, Assistant Commissioner with the Department of Administration.
Mr. Chair, I did check with nonpartisan architectural expert Andy Lee on one of the unique rocks that's in the room. So maybe if you could just say what's there.
Mr. Chair and members, in the elevator lobbies on the ground and first floor is Morton Nice, quarried from Morton, Minnesota. So.
Chair Lee and Representative Ryer, I will have Assistant Commissioner Wayne Wozlowski address that question with the specifics. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative, currently we have a loop system, as you're well aware. So as you're exiting out of judicial building and getting to it'll essentially be capped. There will be egress maintained so that there's for our facilities team only, but otherwise it'll be capped at that end. And then it'll also be capped on the coming from the vet services side as well. The idea with future redevelopment in mind that tunnel would be reconnected in the future. We will have some utility as part of the demolition project. We'll have some utility relocations to facilitate that as well. Mr. Chair, Representative, we actually would direct people to go the other direction. So from vet services, go through transportation building, and then obviously we're currently undertaking completing the ADA upgrades that this committee helped fund between the state office building and the Capitol building. So you will have a more accessible path than what currently exists between Centennial office building and the Capitol.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Will, there's a concern for a couple of different like agencies that I know just speaking because overall this is the district that I represent and certain folks from staff just pop in to talk to me. But is there any access from the COB parking lot from the tunnel?
Mr. Chair, Representative, there will not be direct access. Still, it'll be, you'd have to go through the judicial center facility to access the tunnel. There won't be a tunnel access just outside of the COB ramp.
Okay.
So if you're going to tear down the Centennial Office Building, how difficult would it be to keep the tunnel from the Veterans Affair to the parking ramp? So if you're parking there and you have access, you got to go to the State Office Building, can you get from there to that? I mean, have you explored any of this? All right, thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we did explore essentially reconnecting up the tunnel. So you would, so as the tunnel exits Judicial, you would essentially route over to running parallel to Cedar Avenue and then reconnect up to the existing tunnel. It is a cost consideration. That is a, to do that was somewhere in the ballpark of a $2 million cost to additional cost to reconnect that tunnel system. And you still would not have then a, you'd have to create the connection over to the Centennial Office, the ramp.
I, you know, in the private world, every time you do something like that, you pass the cost on to the user. So if you're going to park your vehicle there, it may be more expensive parking, but at least you have the luxury of walking from your vehicle to, like on a day like today or yesterday, you can stay indoors. Even if you have to walk around through the State Office Building to get to the Capitol, the, you know, again, for two million, you said, that's the difference?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's the, to connect up with, so you'd have a continuous loop, there'd be some additional cost to connect in the Centennial ramp.
I just think it should, and I don't know, Representative Ryer, that's where you were trying to go with it. You know, I kind of what I was, or sorry, Representative Perez Vega, just trying to figure out how to make it more user-friendly. It seems we're pretty used to that. I mean, we spent a whole pile of money getting that new elevator to the Capitol from the State Office Building. I would think we could find something somewhere for this. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we can certainly come back with information on what that might look like from a cost standpoint.
Thank you, Chair. Can you expand on the lead pipe and asbestos remediation amongst the state assets, building assets? Where are we at as far as completing that work? Is there a long-term plan that you're executing? Is it separate from other renovations? Things like that.
Mr. Chair, Representative, just as you are well aware with your background, you know, the abatement of hazardous materials really, it's been ongoing since the 1990s. And it really is, for the most part, project, it, two issues drive it. One is a project's happening, and so you're interacting with hazardous materials. The other, if you have anything that becomes friable, airborne, and a health and safety issue. So a lot of what is remaining is, for example, mastic in under floor tile, and then insulation wrap within within wall systems. So it really, it's difficult to assess until you're doing a project. There really hasn't been a, from a, of the 4,800 buildings, there hasn't been a comprehensive assessment building by building. I would just, in, you know, that we should be past the majority of that work, but we still, it's still going to be ongoing as we're back to our building age, our average building age being 44 years old, particularly with our older buildings, we still will be encountering this on a regular basis.
Well, given that we've been doing this for 35, 40 years, I mean, I was kind of looking for an idea of how much longer we've got to keep doing it, because we've had probably renovations in many of the buildings throughout the state for that period of time. So just wanted to get an idea of when those bills are going to stop coming in, kind of thing.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative, we can look through our data to see if during our facility assessment condition process, if we, if there's a way for us to gauge that at an enterprise level, and can follow up with you on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, Commissioner, we when we started this committee hearing, we were talking about the priorities of the cabinet within safety, right? And so just implementing that, we want to feel that there's a safe plan and accessibility from like COB parking to have to go outside to go to a tunnel. Like, does that feel safe? Is just something that I want to highlight. And then also addressing with the demolition of the COB, of the Centennial Office Building. You know, right now there's just a plan for like a green space, but I, as I was appointed to serve on the Public Engagement Task Force, I would inquire that the community of the Capitol area be a part of that planning and encourage that if that is going to be what is it, where the COB is at, is that it is a communal space and that the community impact is felt and also addressed, and not just implementation of what we feel is best for this area. So just want to highlight connecting safety to our staff, connecting safety to what the realities of our times are right now, and also addressing the need to continue the community engagement process on if it will be demolished. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Lee and Representative Perez Vega. Thank you for your input. I appreciate that. And as we pointed out, I pointed out a little earlier, this is just phase one. But yes, the community's input is always important, and we work closely with the community stakeholders here, both in the neighborhood and through the Capital Area Planning Board too, and other stakeholders. So thank you for that input, and we'll definitely keep that in mind as a priority. Appreciate that.
Members, any additional questions? If not, I just have two quick questions, and then we can adjourn. So first question, just looking at the slideshow, I just realized that the funding request for the capital is in general fund. And so can you just kind of give us, when is the threshold something which is more general maintenance, and when can they actually fall into asset preservation using the funding for asset preservation? So that would be zero.
Mr. Chair, can I defer in part to let MMB, given that this is their mainly their expertise. I would just say generally it's improvements that last over 10 years. So you're looking at something that's going to last more in that 15 to 20 years. That's one of the general parameters. As Commissioner Granville noted, you know, this, it would be typically more considered a maintenance item, except just the magnitude of this, given the Capitol building itself, is really what pushes it more to be a request that becomes before this committee.
Thank you. And then last question is, I know that in years past, I've asked you guys to do a great job and explain. Can you just remind the committee, you know, in 2023, we gave you guys this, or just agencies in general, funding for asset preservation. Can you explain why some of those funding are not extended? I understand that, you know, even though it's been appropriated,
Mr. Chair, members, I can talk about that briefly. It depends on a few different factors. One is the amount of design work that's involved in a project, and typically a design phase for an asset preservation project can last anywhere between 6 to 12 months, depending on the scope of that work. So that certainly is a factor. You also have our procurement processes, obviously having an open competitive process when we're doing selecting our consultants, and then as well as bidding out the work takes a period of time. And then generally construction now is just taking longer. After we've come out of the pandemic, you still have supply chain issues, you still have labor challenges in certain trades. So I would just say just generally it takes longer. And then lastly, I'd note facility specific, if you think of correctional facilities, any of our secure facilities, the amount of coordination that needs to happen to maintain security as projects are being completed, that process just takes longer. It also takes resources from the agencies as well to coordinate.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner. So, Commissioner Grunwald, thank you. Assistant Commissioner Director, thank you for coming forward to the committee.
Member,
thank you all for asking your questions today.